We did some work with niacin, and one of the things that we saw in the pre-fresh cow was that we saw an increase in urinary purine derivatives, indicating more microbial protein synthesis in the rumen when we fed the niacin. And we fed the Holstein 0, 16, 32, or 48 grams a day, a lot more than what was done initially with 6 grams or 12 grams. And we saw an improvement in colostrum quality, IgG yield with 32 grams, significant. But what was really cool was we looked at the feed efficiency of the calves. And what we found was the calves that were born of the dams that got 32 grams of niacin, now not rumen protected, raw niacin per day, were more feed efficient.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Adasail, provider of Smartamine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production. Kemin invites you to optimize your herd's performance. Dive in at kemin.com/dairy. Birdus Nutrition, the fatty acid people. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Zinpro Isoferm is the nutrient your herd needs. Fuel the rumen first and unlock dairy herd productivity and greater profitability.
Welcome back to the Dairy Nutrition Black Belt Podcast. I'm the host today, Rick Lundquist, and we're going to welcome back our guest, Dr. Peter Erickson, Professor of Dairy Management and Extension at the University of New Hampshire, to continue our discussion on colostrum.
Yep. Very,
that's interesting. You know, and I always thought it was, as far as the fall, I always thought it was photoperiod. But what you're saying about temperature, I guess, yeah, I worked most of my career in the South, and until I got clients up in Minnesota and stuff, that's when I started hearing about this lack of colostrum in the winter. So, and I don't know, have you seen any work done comparison to the Southern Hemisphere? Is it the same there, only different?
I don't know about the Southern Hemisphere, no. But I do know, and I think it would make sense that it would be just the opposite. So the further south you go in the winter, the less production of colostrum you're going to have. The I was in Alberta in the winter giving a talk and to a bunch of dairy farmers, and I said, do you run into that problem? And every one of them, regardless of breed, said, yes, we do. Yes, we do. So I think that it is, I think it's temperature. And there was a paper out of Illinois, out of the vet school, and they had a barn where they had lighting, and they could augment the lighting and go an 8 hours, 16 hours on, that kind of thing. And they didn't see any effect. So the challenge we run into, as you know, is photoperiod and environmental temperature are confounded. That's the challenge. So that's why we're looking at we have to mention in our study that, you know, it could be confounded, but we're looking at situations where it's cold, prolactin. I'm thinking that it's probably together. An interesting thing. We have two dairies at UNH. We have an organic dairy and we have a conventional tie stall dairy. And very rarely do we run into any problems at the conventional tie stall dairy with colostrum yield. Cows are calved in a calving pen inside a barn. Granted, they're Holsteins, but I'm not convinced that it's necessarily a breed difference. The other farm is Jerseys, and they calve essentially in a three-sided shed. So you can pretty much time your watch to when the Jersey's colostrum is going to plummet. And it is not uncommon for us to have 2 pounds of colostrum or no colostrum in the winter. Occasionally it happens in the summer. I don't know why. But it's not uncommon for us to see this effect. Rarely do we see it in our conventional Holstein herd. So I think it's the environment they're raising. It might be something as simple, Rick, as having cows calve inside, just having, without having access to the, you know, it might be just that simple.
unlock whole herd performance with ZenPro IsoFur. This one-of-a-kind technology enhances rumen performance and advances efficiency by directly feeding the rumen microbes. What's the result? Decreased dry matter intake, increased energy-corrected milk, better feed efficiency, and a herd that is better equipped to navigate the stress of lactation phases and seasonal change. Learn more at zenpro.com/isofirm.
Now, as far as feed additives and stuff, you mentioned rumen-protected choline, and you know, most of my herds are on rumen-protected choline. I had one client in Minnesota last fall, I guess it was. It said his herdsman was saying, "Yeah, we're not getting much colostrum out of these cows," and I suggested rumen-protected choline because he had never fed it before, just in the close-up period. And so he said, "Well, I'll go get some." Started it, and I asked him a couple of weeks later. I said, "Well, how's it going?" He said, "Well, it seemed to turn everything around, so maybe there is something there."
I think there is. I think there is.
I mean, that's an N of one, but it was my observation.
We've done some work with niacin. That's what I did my PhD on, and everything goes around. And so we did some work with niacin, and one of the things that we saw in the pre-fresh cow was that we saw an increase in urinary purine derivatives, indicating more microbial protein synthesis in the rumen when we fed the niacin. And we fed the Holstein 0, 16, 32, or 48 grams a day, a lot more than what was done initially with 6 grams or 12 grams. And we saw an improvement in colostrum quality, IgG yield with 32 grams, significant. But what was really cool was we looked at the feed efficiency of the calves. And what we found was the calves that were born of the dams that got 32 grams of niacin, now not rumen protected, raw niacin per day, were more feed efficient. So to carry it one step further, in a study we did with Jerseys, we did a similar experiment. At 5 days of age, we gave them all a dose of xylose in their milk. You can measure xylose in the blood, and it's a marker of intestinal development. And lo and behold, those calves that got colostrum from cows fed niacin had an increase in xylose absorption, indicating to me that it has something to do with intestinal development. So is that going to be insulin-like growth factor 1, which appears to be higher in colostrum from those cows, or lactoferrin, something like that, which can actually stimulate intestinal development? So it's not only the IgG, it's these other things too, which is kind of neat. So we're spinning this out a little bit to see what's happening.
Sure. Interesting.
So, yeah.
You know, I was going to ask you about the effect of cooling dry cows on colostrum yield and quality. Now that you've said that it's cold temperatures that affect it, I'm not sure if that's the case.
Well, within reason, right? I mean, if you look at, you know, summertime, right? The data from Florida, and I know you know Florida very well. The data from Florida would indicate that we should cool our dry cows, and I think we should cool our dry cows. What I'm talking about is when the temperature is below the lower critical temperature of 5 degrees C. That's what I'm talking about. So when it's February in Minnesota and it's minus 20, you know, that's when we're going to have problems. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but we're not going to have problems, you know, if it's 45 degrees Fahrenheit or 50 degrees Fahrenheit. I think cooling in the summertime is definitely worthwhile. And I believe they calculated that about almost every state, I think with the exception of Washington State in the lower 48, will benefit from cooling dry cows as far as colostrum and calf health, calf growth goes. So I think that's worthwhile. So I don't want to be construed that I don't think we should cool our dry cows.
No, I understand that, yeah. But I thought that might have an effect on colostrum, but I mean, it's overall just a good practice. And we've certainly seen a lot of benefits from doing it, that's for sure.
And the data would show that the warmer it is, our data would show that, yeah, they'll make more colostrum, you know, but is it good quality colostrum? That's the next question. And the jury's out on that.
I was going to ask you too, now, as far as a measurement of your colostrum program success of it, do you recommend blood testing calves for blood proteins?
So from a research standpoint, we do. So we do, and we'll do a 24-hour sample and basically measure IgG, which a farmer's not going to do. So you're looking at serum total protein as your values there. And that's yes, I do recommend. I would recommend that. Yeah. I would also recommend, and while I'm thinking about it, that everybody should have some colostrum replacer on hand. That's a lacteal-based colostrum replacer, just in case. If you don't have it frozen, you should definitely have that available to you as a backup. No question about that. And there's some really good ones out there.
Anything else that comes to mind that we can do to help improve colostrum yield, colostrum quality?
Colostrum quality. That's kind of a tough one. There's data that if we overfeed energy during the dry period, that colostrum yield will go down. So that's one thing. There's some limited data suggesting that if we feed sugar, and this is data from Minnesota, that if we feed sugar, we'll actually see an improvement in colostrum, yield and quality. So there's some of the stuff is not as clear as we would think. One would think that if we're providing protein, we should see an improvement in colostrum quality because an immunoglobulin is a protein. Not necessarily. And the jury's out. Also, typically we'll feed a DCAD diet to pre-fresh cows, you know, and the jury's out on that as well. So some data says it's not good. Some data said it's fine. I'm going to lean towards that we should be feeding a DCAD diet or something to reduce the incidence of hypocalcemia. To my knowledge, there's only one study done with zeolite in colostrum, and there's only one study done on it, so that jury remains out. But our data from other places, I think we stick with the DCAD. I will tell you this, though, now that I recall. With Jerseys, the DCAD is different than with Holsteins. We fed a minus 80 milliequivalent per kg diet to Jerseys. Not good. It affected colostrum. It was not good. Minus 40, I would feed that to Jersey all day long. So, and that based on our data. So it's, but, you know, again, the Jerseys and the Holsteins are different cats. They're not the same thing.
That's for sure.
Unlock whole herd performance with ZenPro IsoFer. This one-of-a-kind technology enhances rumen performance and advances efficiency by directly feeding the rumen microbes. What's the result? Decreased dry matter intake, increased energy-corrected milk, better feed efficiency, and a herd that is better equipped to navigate the stress of lactation phases and seasonal change. Learn more at zenpro.com/isofirm.
You mentioned that some data suggesting sugar, is that fed in the dry period or during the springer?
Dry period. During the dry period. Yeah. That was done in, I think it was done in St. Paul. That was a long time ago, but that was, yeah. It never got published in a scientific journal, but it did appear in the proceedings of the Minnesota Nutrition Conference. So, but yeah, so it's an interesting area. We're doing some work right now looking at probiotics during the dry period and seeing its effect on colostrum and then continuing to feed it or not to their calves and following their calves for 12 weeks. And yeah, that's with Holsteins. So far, so good.
Well, it's a really interesting topic, and like I say, it's really timely now. There's a lot more interest in it because there's a lot more value in it now than just for replacements, you know. So, for raising calves, yeah.
One really neat study that was done at from Arizona, but the research was done on a commercial brown Swiss herd in Wisconsin, and it just again, all they did, they fed half of the calves, four liters of colostrum, the other half, 2 liters of colostrum. That's the only difference. And then they just followed them, and they just calculated the profit data, if you will. And it was amazing that 4 liters of good quality colostrum compared to 2 liters of good quality colostrum did. You know, and that was in 2005. And it just... People now, we're doing our study now, we're feeding 2 gallons in 24 hours right now. So, which, you know, they're not really relishing eating the first day any milk, but they're doing great.
I can imagine. Yeah.
They're doing, and it's a colostrum replacer, so they're doing great.
Thanks, Pete, and thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you again next time.